There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan.
My brother from another mother.
On FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Here we go, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Congratulations, Don. Just picked up that family four-pack of tickets to the GND Wildlife Expo coming up September 11th, 12th, and 13th out of the grounds. We'll see you out there for that event. And your chance to win more tickets coming up very, very soon. All right, good to get this man in the studio. And the reason I barely got the mic keyed in time to introduce this hour of the show is because JJ McCool from Wildlife Solutions is a guy that I could talk to for hours on end, and it's good to see you in here. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Sean. Good to be here.
You know, what we talk about, a lot of times you and I have talked about critters.
Yes.
Wildlife Solutions. There's still critters getting in people's houses?
There are.
They hadn't stopped that. I'm going to get you closer to that mic, a little closer.
And I'm glad they do because it's good job security for us. I think the wildlife and human interaction and conflicts is always going to be a problem as we have more green space. Here in Baldwin County, the great thing is we have so much green space. Like, I live in Fairhope. We have the gullies and things. And so everyone loves to live in Fairhope. We love living in Baldwin County and Ayers and Mobile County. And so do animals. We have a really good place. The thing, like talking today about animals, my company is kind of odd. People see our trucks. They recognize us as a nuisance animal company resolving wildlife and human conflicts. A lot of people don't realize our company is actually twofold. We have a seven-man crew here from Pensacola, New Orleans to Birmingham that do just animals, wild hogs, coyotes, snakes, typical things, a lot of bat conflicts. But the larger part, a big part of my company is the what we call the forestry division. And I pretty much oversee that all the time. And we're government or quasi-government contractors. And we do very large-scale habitat restoration. Mainly work Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Forest Service, Nature Conservancy, Sierra Club, but also for large private landowners. And we also work for mitigation companies and mitigation construction companies. And that's the part we travel a lot. We do it from New England all the way to Texas. Working in Texas right now.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
It's cool to find like local companies. And I'll be traveling somewhere and say, I saw one of y'all's signs or something out there. They said, well, Sean, we work all over the country. I'm like, yeah, I thought y'all were just here at home. A lot of engineering firms and all that. And I'm like, y'all got an office out there? They're like, yeah. I'm like, I don't know. It's just always neat to see, you know, the folks from here doing stuff around the country.
Well, it is funny you say that because people ask me constantly animal stuff, or they'll tell me, hey, y'all caught those coyotes over or whatever. I'll kind of be out of the loop. I'll say, yeah, I saw the text on my company text thread.
Right.
My nuisance guys is run by Michael Niemeyer. I have a phenomenal crew of guys that
he's a pretty
animals.
Good dude.
They're,
don't tell him I said that, though.
I have a very eclectic, very odd. I mean, I got
I like
dreadlocks. I got ponytails. Yep. I've got straight cut, and they are just – they are great, great guys, and I'm very lucky. I call them my crock pot crew because they're like a crock pot. You put them out there, you don't have to worry about them.
Yeah.
They're cooking. And then my other side of my company, we do the restoration. Most people don't realize that because our advertisement and our things like that are kind of more nationwide. And I have six people that assist me with that all the time. And then in the fall, we have 55 to 60 H2B professional forestry workers that come in. They come from October to July. And so we call it drinking from the fire hose because planting season is really in the fall after dormancy. This year, I think from October to March, we planted 2.7 million trees and marsh plants. And when they get
$2.7 million,
and every
damn JJ,
most of those were had to be transported by boat. Probably $1.2 million had to be transported by boat. 800,000 of that had to be transported by Marshmaster.
Those things are cool.
And so, yeah, they are.
If you ever go sell one, I mean, you know, I don't think I could. I turn wrench on a lot of stuff. I don't know how to fix those, but they're cool.
Well,
these are like the tanks, y'all.
They're like Army. Look like Army tanks. They're aluminum, and they are our bread and butter. Of course, we use airboats, surface drives, barges, but Marshmasters.
When I retire, I'm coming to work for you.
The Marshmasters, I used to own several. But we pretty much, I've gotten so good friends with Coast Equipment, the guys there in Baton Rouge, until I just leased them from them. And usually we'll lease their entire fleet. I've used sometimes 8 or 9 of them at one time. But it's, you know, pretty costly thing. I mean, because each one is about $1,000 a day. And you got an operator, you got fuel. So you got 8 of them. You're probably around $10,000 a day every day you got that thing out there, whether you're working or not. But we couldn't do it without them.
Yep. All right. Listen, the ones that run out by my house, mowing on gas line and all that. I mean, there's certain areas, you know, where I'm in West Mobile County. Either you could drive a Honda Civic on it, or you got to have a Marshmaster. That ink mud. Yeah. So when they're trying to keep those things, I always stand there and look at them where they come past my cameras. I'm like, man, one day I don't know what I'm gonna do with it, but I'll have it. Go riding around.
They're a great piece of equipment. They only have about 1.5 pounds of ground pressure, so you can run across the marsh. And I have some sleds that I had help built here locally. I have 6 custom sleds built that we pull trees in. We destroy them every year and have them rebuilt. But that's what we use. We have a little tow hitch we put behind the Marshmaster, and that's what we tow them. I'll show you some pictures. It's really cool. Every cigarette, every tortilla, every tree, every dibble bar, we load it all in those sleds, and we go out across the country out through the marsh planting.
So what do you have the $2.7 million? Let's talk about what you plant. I mean, you can't tell me everything, but you said you're by boat, so that makes me think marsh grasses.
It is. Yes. So that's a good question. So this year, a big part of our planting, like about a million trees, were ball cypress.
Okay, putting in cypress.
And maybe a few, a few 100,000 tupelo gum, okay? And those were
I got planted. Some tupelo gum if you want some. We can dig them.
I've got plenty. And so we have these trees are custom grown for projects. So we forecast it a year out. So this particular planting this year was for carbon sequestration and also resilience to the coastal marshes of Louisiana. So they'll give us a polygon of, let's say, 10,000 acres. Of that 10,000 acres, you'll lose several thousand acres. You just can't plant it because it's just standing water, mm-hmm. or some big potholes. So what we'll do, we bring those trees in. We have them in a tractor trailer. I think this year I had, 12 tractor trailer loads come in. I'll go in and I'll rent a boat ramp. I'll rent a boat ramp and staging area early. I've got to be friends. Everybody has boat ramps in South Louisiana. I pay them very well, and therefore we can stage the trucks. We pull in with our barges. I have aluminum barges. We come up. Guys will manually throw the bags of trees, load them. Then they go out, and wherever we may be, this year we had a 10-mile boat ride. 10-mile boat ride, you're fishing, that's cool. Hey, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. 10-mile boat ride to work, and you're moving 30
pushing
or 40
barge,
guys every morning. I always tell people, I said, if you know what a man's stress level is, where he works outside, is how many weather apps he has.
Yes.
Because when you got 30 or 40, 50 guys, you got to move them 10 miles down the river.
That many people.
And then get out and then get.
Plus the trees and grasses.
Plus the trees. You've already mobilized your Marshmasters, your fuel, all that down there. So in the morning, somebody's got to be fueling, greasing, getting ready. Then we have the tree staged the night before if there's not a really bad bunch of nutri-rats in the area. Mm-hmm. That's a whole nother story. Mm-hmm. We move those trees there. Then we take off out to where we are in the marsh. We may have to go by marsh buggy maybe a half mile or a mile into the marsh to where we're supposed to are planting polygons. We'll start
this is what they've showed you.
They said we want
this area.
And the planting spacing. And so we go in and we're installing the trees, whether it's sometimes we plant in clumps, sometimes we plant in rows, just like pines. So then we'll go back and the barge will be running back and they'll be running trees. But all this stuff has to be moved a long way, and it's a living organism.
Yeah.
You can't let it set out. You can't let it get hot. That's why it's done during dormancy. So that is, a little over 1 million, 1.2 this year we did cypress. Right prior
how big
to
are the
that,
how big are the cypress y'all
cypress trees are about 30 inches tall, okay. 30 to 36 inches tall, and they're about the size of your finger,
okay.
In caliper. Very good. They're 1 year old, and we grow them in several different types of container sizes. Instead of a bare root, on most of the carbon stuff that we do in the marsh, we'll use what we call a quart size or a 1 gallon, has a much larger root structure, and that helps it anchor. And sometimes we have to put on tree tubes to try to prevent from the nutrients. Sometimes we have to stake them. We have to put a bamboo stake down and flag to that to give it where it will stand up in the wind, at least until it gets rooted in.
You do with a satsuma tree or a fig tree or something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. And the bundles of stakes are about 50 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got and there's 250 in a bundle. So for every 1,000 trees, you got four bundles of 50 pounds. You have to get those out there. And airboats, we use airboats some. We'll use surf drives. But when you load a marshmaster down and you've got all that weight in the back and then water's getting in and mud, it's a lot. It's a lot of hard physical work. And the guys that I have do it, they are H2B. My guys are H2B. You've maybe heard of H2A for agriculture. Mm-hmm. H2B are for business. So I fall under the same guys that are serving you your drink at the colony around the pool that may be here for
H2B visas. Yeah, yeah.
H2B. My guys are H2B woods guys.
Gotcha.
They're like the difference in a logger here and somebody that's doing computer programming.
Gotcha.
A different critter.
Yep.
They like the woods and they're a particular breed.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a funny eclectic crew that we have. So we take that out, and that would be our marsh planting, and that's his trees. Okay. Now, like another project we had this year, there was another almost 800,000, and it was bare root. It literally was right before we started planting this. The Bayou Sauvage Wildlife Refuge in Louisiana, which we've worked there a lot, they were reforesting 1,000 acres in there. And so we went in and we planted those trees. These are all hardwoods, bare roots. And so it took us about a month. Again, this was really hard access. It was supposed to be mulched. It was helicopter sprayed and killed all the tallow trees, which were invasive exotics. Then we had to go
like
ahead.
Like a mazapir or something?
We do. We use that. They use a mazamox or clear cast to spray that. The problem is it got too wet, so the mulching didn't get done.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, so
walking through it.
It was treacherous at best.
Yeah, walking through all the dead trees.
All the dead trees. Now you got to worry about falling on somebody. So we went in. We planted 780,000 bottomland hardwoods. What we're trying to do is convert that, get rid of the invasives, and convert that back to what it was originally before it got cleared.
Yeah, before it got logged. Yeah,
yeah.
And go to the break here in a second. But we could talk about this maybe after the show because there's so many questions I have. Because cypress you talk about, there's like a Goldilocks zone for a cypress. People think that, I see them growing out in the water. They didn't start 6 feet of water and grow up. They had to have a time when they could get right in dirt. And so you got to have the right place. And if you start getting a bunch of flood tide, I mean, there's so many questions I have on how you find the right place for that cypress to go in that's not too dry and not too wet.
That's a great question. We have relatively high mortality, and you add that to saltwater intrusion.
Yeah.
Add saltwater intrusion. You add nutrirats to it.
Yeah.
Okay, two things that were man-made. The nutrirats were brought here. And then the saltwater intrusion, you can argue,
canals,
you can talk about
for
hours about canals and things like that. So what I tell people always ask me about mortality. Well, how many do you think will live? Look, over here we may have 80% survival. Over there we may have 8% survival.
Because different
things happen. However, what I like to tell people is this, that when we're planting this, we come in and we try to get the biggest and best plant with the biggest root ball when we're planting in the marshes because we want to survive. Yes, we will have high mortality. However, the ones that do survive, that have the right stuff, maybe it was microsite, but probably it's natural selection. This tree here, it has the right stuff. And its progeny will have the right stuff.
That's right. They're going to be like their parent.
We're planting it for generations to come.
That's really cool. Coming back more with J.J. McCool. We haven't even gotten into living shorelines right here at home. We're going to do that when we come back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right down.
124 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. We continue our conversation with J.J. McCool. And, I mean, talk about an aptly named person. He's very cool. And it's, we're talking about the planting you did. I mean, the stat was 2.7 million, right?
Yes.
Between grasses and trees.
Yes.
And we focus there on the cypress. I'm pretty interested. And you talk about the different kinds of cypress, right? I mean, we got a lot of people think, oh, the cypress is cypress, but it's not.
No. What we plant is ball cypress on these projects. However, there's another cypress that is really one of my favorite trees, and that's the pond cypress. Pond cypress and cow oak are my two favorite trees always in my whole life. The pond cypress people aren't as familiar with, although I see them, saw some at the American Legion. There's some down there. They're slightly different leaflet, but they're really cool, and they do grow in more wet areas and kind of in the backwater swamps. But what we're doing is mostly all ball cypress. It's easier to propagate. It's more easier to commercial available. And when I talk to the nurseries, the pond cypress is a little hard to propagate in a nursery. A lot of these plants are. They'll grow in the nature, but not out mm-hmm. there. Then, and when we were planting at, like I talked about, the wildlife refuge, now there, we planted 12 different species.
Not just cypress.
Now, when we're there, we are trying to mimic a 300-year-old forest that was there before. So we killed
Which had been evolving for eons.
For eons. It would be a typical bottomland, Louisiana swamp, mm-hmm. bottomland hardwood. And there's some kind of ridge areas.
Well, that's what I was going to say. You have subtlety. And I'm sorry, but this is my chance to nerd out with a guy like this. Even in the river swamp, you have the levee ridge by the river, but you have subtle ridges inside. And what will grow? A red oak right here. And this will be a swamp chestnut down there. And you'll have an overcover. Like, that little bit of a difference.
It is the slightest elevation difference, only a few inches. I mean, very slight.
One tree does great there, but it wouldn't do great right over there.
Precisely. And we call this a microsite. And so when we're planting, of course, the guy that's planting, he's already exhausted. He's got tree bags loaded up with three or four species. We try our best to locate an area. If it's a ridge area, we'll load these guys' bags up, say, we'll go through this one area if it's a slight difference. But at the same time, we're planning on a density of, let's say, 10 foot by 10 foot, which is 435 stems per acre. That's kind of like what we target for. Sometimes it's 304 stems if it's hardwoods, 12 by 12. But we're trying to get a good shotgun approach across the landscape so that we're getting the right species in the right place. But if not, we've got enough out there that'll work itself out. Nature will work itself out. And we try to address, if we're doing something like this at the wildlife refuge, is to get the gratification, we'll go ahead and do what we call the subarborescent species of your shrub layer.
I'm going to start using that term like I know. Subarborescent.
Yeah, or just the shrub layer.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't use that word much either.
I'm with that.
But in case
one
of my professors, I ran into one of him duck hunting in Saskatchewan. He was like pimping me. He's like 80, pimping me about waterfowl.
I love it.
So we'll plant things like American Beautyberry. We plant Southern wax myrtle,
which are showing
like
out
that.
Right now. The beautyberry showing out. At the
oh yes, and a Florida flinge tree, another Grancy graybeard.
Mm-hmm.
We plant those. Really cool.
That's
tree.
Cool.
Really cool tree. And then of course we'll plant your canopy species. You know, cow oak, water oak, willow mm-hmm. oak, cypress, tupelo gum, black gum, those things. So hopefully we'll get out there. They'll outcompete the tallow. They'll outcompete the invasives. And I may be gone, but in some period down the road there, we'll have a nice bottomland forest that it was before. And what's great about that in New Orleans, that was going to be some kind of big development. I don't know who the person was thought they were going to develop it. One time, we found these big berms this year out in the swamp. And I was like, hey, are these Indian mounds? No. It was actually because we were the clubhouse they were going to build for a golf course. And some guy, and the wildlife refuge.
You're like, are we on a mound here?
Yeah.
Is this some Mississippian culture?
Yes.
No, it's golf and resort club.
Well, one of my guys said there's some yaupon growing. And I'm like, there's no yaupon out there.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, there's yaupon. Sure enough, it was a hill. But they figured out we can't build this on this swamp out here. It's cost prohibitive. So the wildlife refuge ended up with this acreage, which was great. Because now it's going to be a bottomland hardwood, more habitat.
That is very cool. And I'll start the conversation. We'll go to break here. But living shorelines, something else that you're talking about, these projects working with, you know, governmental agencies, states, and all that. But there's been a lot of discussion and legislation gone through about living shorelines here at home for people's regular property.
Yes, it is. And we're We got into it because it kind of fell into our wheelhouse, and I think we're one of the first people to actually do it because it takes a lot of labor on these small residential areas. Because a lot of the rock, there's no other way to get a barge in there. It's too small, or you have to go to someone's yard. And so we actually move the rock by hand. And when you've got 25 or 30 guys, you can take a couple dump truck loads of Gabion stone or riprap, and we carry it. We carry it. We put little boats, wheelbarrows.
Mind me not to get in a fight with anybody who carries rock for you like that. Yes, sir. If they tell me anything, yes, sir. That's right. Because, I mean, I always talk about it. I'm scared of oystermen for a bar fight and anybody who holds rock like that. All right, coming right back. More with J.J. McCool.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1:34, FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile, glad to have you along. And let's check in with my buddy Blaine at Paris Tractor in Robertsdale. Man, it's still yard season, but like you and I both been thinking about going and getting the work done at the camp, getting plots ready. What you got at the shop?
That's right, Sean. So right now we're advertising our compact tractor packages, perfect size for the hunt camp. We can build these packages for you however you please, with the trailer, without, with all different types of implements, or just the tractor itself, or just the implements themselves. We got plenty of the bush hogs, Coldy packers, fertilizer spreaders, disc, you name it. We got tillers, lane sharks, grapples, all the different attachments in stock right now here at Paris Tractor in Robertsdale.
And you and I have said before, if you want to be the guy that works the least physical work when it's work weekend at the hunting camp, be the guy with the tractor.
That's right.
He just pointed people.
In that operator seat, and you just ride all day.
great stuff. And what about on rental, too? You're selling them, but what about on the rental side?
So we rent them as well, just like we sell them. So all the different implements and attachments, the trailers, we offer pickup and delivery on all of our equipment, whether it be rental equipment, new equipment, or your personal equipment that you just need to get worked on here at our shop. Pickup and delivery available on all of it, but we do also rent the trailers with these tractor packages as well.
All right, tell us how to find you.
We're right here in Robertsdale on Highway 59 at Paris Tractor. You can come by and see us Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturdays, 8 till noon. You can check us out online and see all of our different inventory and specials at paristractor.com, or you give us a call at 251-947-4171.
Thank you, Blaine.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, there goes Blaine at Paris Tractor. Continue our conversation with J.J. McCool. We were also talking about Living Shoreline. Before we get to that, though, something that many of y'all have enjoyed is more of J.J.'s work, Robinson Island.
Yeah, we did. That was part of our I think there we had 298,000 plants, if I remember them, something like that. We did Robinson Island early this year. It turned out really well. And I ask everybody to please enjoy that. When they look, we've got a fence up there.
Don't step on them.
Don't step on them. We had those sand fences up. We left there's a really big shoreline. I worked with Nature Conservancy and also with Moffitt Nichols and the City of Orange Beach. They did a really good job on the design. We planted multiple species there, sea oak, switchgrass. We planted juncus down in the bottom along with Spartina altiflora, cordgrass. It worked out well. We also put up, if people ask a lot, what is the fencing? There's this tan sand fencing up that has, it's like a screen. And what it does, as the wind passes and hits that, it decreases the velocity of the air, and the sand particles, they'll drop out. They'll decant or disseminate out.
Almost like a silt fence slowing down water.
That's right. And what this does, it builds a dune. So if you notice, it will start building up on the windward side. It creates a dune. They're also,
smart.
We use them, it's great. We use them as a barrier. And what that barrier is, just stay out of the plants. You've got plenty of shoreline, but folks did go across and knock it down, but they're there for a reason. And they add much resilience to the shoreline. They'll also notice, people ask me this, if you look at it from the air, you look at it, there's a lot of these fences running parallel to each other. And if you'll notice, they're oriented mostly towards kind of the southeast or to the northwest. And that's because...
Dominant winds? Or
yes, dominant winds. So as it catches that sand, instead of blowing it off out into the water, it hits the sand fence, and it accretes at a pretty rapid rate. If you have anything to disturb that air velocity on a beach, it works well. So what these sand fences do is they'll build up and they'll create a dune. I'll give you a great example, and it's one of the very simple and successful things. And Kelly Reese at the Gulf State Park, I give her all the credit. She's the one who came up with it years ago. It's putting Christmas trees. I don't know if you ever saw when we put the Christmas trees out on the beach. Okay. And I'm a contractor, so I live by the bid and estimating jobs to make money and not lose it. If you ever bid something on a gigantic pile of Christmas trees and you go out there and you measure a segment, say there's this many trees in a pile, don't forget they get squashed at the bottom. There's 10 times. It was like the everlasting gobstopper of Christmas trees. They piled them down at Gulf State Park, and we would go out and we kind of crisscrossed them and laid them on the beach. And what happened over time, they were going, when it hit the limbs of the Christmas tree, a small pile, two or three,
right,
it would slow down and build up. Mm-hmm. All those dunes you see now around the convention center.
There's Christmas trees under them?
They're huge dunes. I'm talking huge, like three or four pickup truck size. They were created by just a few little Christmas trees. It was
That's
crazy.
Smart.
It worked phenomenal. And then we planted sea oats on top of them. But so same thing at Robinson, Walker East, Walker West. A lot of people think Bird Island, which is your first island coming to the pass, they call that Robinson.
Yeah.
Where everybody said, really, that's Bird. And then Robinson's the one behind it, right across the boat ramp. All those did really well. And they've got sea oats. They've got juncus, fish, everything. The birds. Sean, this year I had to go back to do some supplemental planting because some of it got kind of late and got drought struck, and so we had to go back and supplemental plant. Every post out there has a osprey on it, has a great blue herring, green-black herring, black nape stilts. There's all kind of wildlife out there using it. When we do these projects like that, another good example is Bala Battery Lightning Point.
Mm-hmm. Know that? Now you're talking my side of the bay. All right.
If you go to Lightning Point, when we were building that, and we were doing all the planting. We even took 5-gallon buckets of oyster shells, and we would sprinkle those out to make nesting habitat. We put in the little canals. We did planting. Literally, before we were even done doing our work, birds were coming in nesting. You know, finger mullet were up in the little canals and the creeks. It's really instant gratification.
That's what I'm watching you light up, and that's what I was going to ask you. How does that? I mean, it's like an interviewer's question, but how does that make you feel?
It makes me feel great because I look out there and I'm like, man, this is incredible. Or I ride by all the time on highways. I'm old now, so I ride by and I say, hey, I planted that. I planted this, and I know, at least I hope, that 100 years from now, when some McCool ancestors are out there and they're going to the airport in New Orleans, they'll look left and right and go, man, my papaw, he planted that out there.
I love it. And let's talk about that gratification, too, on living shorelines for people. I mean, to me, it makes sense, and having, you know, camps over the years on rivers and all that is, I always used to say, it's like judo. Don't fight against nature. Work with it, because you fight against her, especially the water, she's going to kick your butt. You know, and this, so the idea when people started talking about living shorelines, I said, of course, that makes more sense than a bulkhead that looks good for a while and then gets undercut, Coriolis effect, undercut, you know, whatever. But it took a long time for that to seem to become a thing, have a brand name to it, and people start doing it.
Well, I think that living shorelines kind of fall in there with a lot of other things with forestry and stuff like that. Now, wild stuff, a lot of people involved with this kind of stuff. And I know people laugh because I'm not a social introvert.
Right.
But a lot of the guys, I mean, if you took everybody I went to forestry and wildlife school with, 90% of them are, man, they love the woods. They want to be out there. And really kind of social introverts. We're not good at getting our message out.
Mm-hmm.
We do a phenomenal job in the United States of America, forestry management. Sure, we have some negatives, but as a whole, we do a great job. The story's not told. The Living Shorelines, Eric Sparks, one of the kind of leading guys, the design guys, and they're doing a really good job now of trying to get information out. But it's one of those things that people just don't know. That's why I was so glad to come on your show. Whether I'm doing it for you or not, it's a great concept. And here's the difference. I own a bulkhead on one of my properties. My property in Mississippi, I have a living shoreline.
Which one do you like better, JJ?
Oh, I'd be at my camp with my. I was there yesterday. Yep. And I live on Fly Creek. And so there was a bulkhead there before. It was really the only option because the house structure and everything was there. However, with the living shoreline, there's a lot of benefits to it. If you go to a living shoreline, you're building the same resilience or very similar as you would with a bulkhead, but at the same time, what you're doing is creating wildlife habitat. And so the way it would work is this. If you have a bulkhead and you put a rigid bulkhead there, and you could have put a living shoreline, that rigid bulkhead is very expensive, $300 to $500 a foot typically.
Is that okay?
That's what a bulkhead typically costs.
Wow. Okay.
Now, that's all over. That's kind of all over, but that's, even if you build it yourself, I can tell you, it's about $300 a foot. Living shorelines, they're kind of all over the place. I just did one this morning. I ran the numbers just for this show, and it was like, I think it was about $130, $136 a foot.
I didn't graduate in math, but that seems like a savings.
It is a savings, and what you get is we'll typically use a rock if sometimes to build what we call the rock seal, which that breaks the action of the wave coming in. So it'd be like a jetty running parallel. Then behind,
it's kind of like you just said about putting the fencing up on it, doing the same idea.
Sean, same concept.
Right.
So you do that. So what you do, you're when that wave comes in, you're taking some of the energy out of that wave that's mostly under the water, and you're breaking that. Then it comes in, and behind that seal, then we'll do what we call a planting plateau. And we'll come in and stack sand in behind that, and it will build up. And then in that sand, so between this berm that may be 10, 15, 20 feet out from the shoreline, we'll build this planting plateau. We'll raise that elevation, and that will, of course, be at a slope. Deeper portion, we'll plant something like smooth cord grass. Up the hill a little bit, black needle rush, everybody, Juggers from Marianas, everybody's mm-hmm. familiar with, we'll plant that. Then maybe the top of the hill, we'll plant marsh hay or meadow cord grass, something like that. And so you have these three species. And when you say instant gratification, we just did one over just up from the Tin Top restaurant. We just did one. Okay, my son ran out there yesterday to kind of check on things. Man, he said, Dad, there was tons of bull minnows. Everything's in there. We won't plant that until the spring, but I can promise you there'll be stuff coming up.
Yeah, natural. Yeah.
And there will be crabs. There'll be bull minnows. There'll be stuff using it. And so you're decreasing the impact. You're making a natural shoreline. The thing that's protected the shoreline for millennia is what you're creating there. So you're getting the best of both worlds. And now, not to speak for ADM or speak for the Corps, but now if you put in for a permit, you know, Corps will stamp whatever your permit for your bulkhead as long as it's above the mean high tide. But like ADM is really going in hard on this. They really like the living shorelines. And now, unless you can show a justification that you have to have a rigid bulkhead, they're going to want you to permit for a living shoreline. And so you can get with Mississippi State University with Eric Sparks, and right. they'll do the design for you. I don't think they charge anything. They'll design this thing. Sometimes they'll have soft structures, what are like core logs. These coconut logs, we'll stake those down. They accrete soil just like the sand fence. We'll plant plants behind those. And I'll tell you, this is kind of a weird thing, but if you've got kids, you got grandkids, let's say you own a piece of shoreline property. If you have a bulkhead, sure, they'll walk down that with a minnow, look over mm-hmm. there and check all that, and they'll see some things. You build a living shoreline, they'll have tenfold, hundredfold interaction with living organisms. They'll look in those shallows just like we do, snails, crabs, minnows, fish. You know, all the stuff is there, the shorebirds. And so you're getting protection of your shoreline. You're increasing the habitat quality for the wildlife. And, man, you get to witness it. You get to be there with it.
It's so, and it's so exciting, too, to think about when you start that process and let Mother Nature do what she's going to do. Like, your bulkhead won't ever create more bulkhead. But it is what it is. It's the concrete. You do living shoreline, and you're slowing this down like y'all are doing. You're building you're getting more land. You're getting more buffer between you and the water. Once you start it, right, it kind of, that motor runs.
The man we just did this for, he was getting, he had a little, a small cliff. Literally, it was just, sloughing off. He's mm-hmm. losing it. we brought back 10. He got 10 more feet of land. Now, mind you, it's going to be marsh. It'll be that. But he was just ecstatic. He said, y'all almost get me back where he put the seal was where he's lost since he's owned it. He's only owned it for about 8 or 9 years.
He lost that much.
He's lost that much. And so that's the big thing. It accretes land, and you're gaining that property back, you know, and you're not losing any more. Bulkheads will do that to a certain point. However, the big thing people need to think, if you're the neighbor of a bulkhead, if everybody's got a bulkhead, that's one thing, okay? But what happens, and go on Google Earth. Go on Google Earth right now, and you can look at a rigid bulkhead, and then look at the property downstream next to it. You'll see a big half moon cut out.
Or washes out, yeah.
Probably there's some lawyer out there going, hey, man, this has affected this other person's property. But here's the thing. When that current's coming down, you talked about the Coriolis effect. That current hits that rigid bulkhead. Okay, that velocity increases. There's nothing dissipating the energy of that water. As it increases and it leaves that bulkhead, and then it hits this bank over here, it's going to be at a high velocity, and it will start scouring our Coriolis effect, cutting out that bank next to it. You'll often see at the downstream side of a terminating bulkhead, you'll see like a half moon cutout next to it, the neighboring property. The water we shove there coming off the surface flow, then that flow downstream is also going to eat it out.
Okay, this is so much. We'll come back to the break, because I want to ask you a question here. Do you see where, instead of it being all bulkheads or a bulkhead here and there, just think about this, in 10 years, in 20 years, we talk about the pawpaw effect, are we going back to the way it used to look? We'll talk about that when we come back. More with JJ.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right to 154 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Good time to check in with my buddy David McCrary at LCM and talk about inventory. How are we looking?
Inventory is good. I tell you this, too. I can't tell you how important Carfax is. Just looked at a car a while ago and ran a Carfax on it, and it's got severe damage. I mean, so you don't ever know that. You know, you got to do your investigations. I mean, the auto check thing shows that it's had one accident, but doesn't show anything else. And Carfax tells you the truth. So you have to be careful. It's all about the tools in your shed.
Yep. And you check them like that before they show up at LCM, but something as a customer of yours for years, if you want to take that vehicle to your own mechanic, you welcome it.
Exactly. I mean, why not? I mean, take it to a mechanic, body shop, or anything else. I mean, we have stuff all the time that we don't know about, and we find out later, you know. I mean, that's just part of it. I mean, these things are... they're built by people, and they're just like you or me. I mean, their blood pressure will go up and have an issue.
That's for sure. Listen, but it's great to know that you've done the due diligence before we see those vehicles on the lot. So tell folks how to check out vehicles online and in person.
Online, it's LCM Motor Cars. Go online, look at any car we've got in inventory. You can look at the Carfax right there. Ask us questions. You can text us from there. If you want to come see us in person, we're at Highway 90 and Plantation. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. We're the third red light on the left-hand corner. Or just give us a call, 251-375-0068.
Hey, thanks, David.
All right, buddy. Have a good weekend.
All right, you too. There goes David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. A few more minutes left with J.J. McCool talking with Living Shorelines. You and I talked during the break, too, about incentivizing it. I know that, you know, legislatively they moved through. Jennifer Fidler been on the show talking about that. What's the situation right now? Somebody's thinking about doing this.
Thinking about this, if they're going to apply for a permit, and I hope I don't speak out of term, but they can apply for a permit, it'll have to go through the court and through ADEM. And an ADEM is going to really, really incentivize them and green flag. If you're doing a living shoreline, I can first tell you, they're going to green flag it. They love living shorelines.
If you're going to permitting process, y'all, if you're doing a living shoreline, it's it's incentivized.
Oh yes, they like it. If you're going to do a rigid bulkhead, they're going to really put it through a due diligence process of scrutinize it, going to look at alternative means, make sure that you don't have other options. Also, if people want to get, you can get actually free help with this for your design. They can reach out to, I'll give you the link that you make, put somewhere Eric Sparks. Our,
yeah.
And they can do design for you. Now, also in Mississippi, we're just looking at doing a big one in Mississippi. They're actually coming with cost share money to help the landowners actually even pay for some of the planting, the rock.
Now we're
like
talking.
That. Yes. So just like we had the WRP and CRP for mm-hmm. planting trees, mm-hmm. they're going to have that for living shorelines. I don't think they have it in Alabama yet, but they do have it now in Mississippi. Matter of fact, I'm doing one of the ones, the very first one's a big one, 500 feet long, private landowner over on Old Fort Bayou. We're going to do one there. There's one other thing I'd like to say to folks, and I hear this a lot, we're doing living shorelines. Well, is that going to make things snaky? Is there going to be more
people
animals?
Texting about, yeah, yeah.
Let me tell you something. All that stuff's already out there, and I can tell you this. The interest and the things that you get to see, yes, you will. You'll see more birds. You might see some water snakes, might see some things like that. I don't know, alligators, everything's already out there. If you have young kids, if you have a visitor from somewhere else, they come here. I see it every day. You can take them to the finest restaurant. You can take them to the goofy golf. You can do all that. When they come down here and they see an alligator, mm-hmm. or they see a snake, or they see a great blue heron trying to swallow a giant mullet, you know what they remember forever? That's what they remember.
Yep.
And every year the snake grows, it gets bigger.
Oh, yeah, by the time that story gets back to Michigan, it's a...
You know, I have relatives come down from up north, and you know they'll go with us see an alligator. I don't even remember it. And they come back, and it's a 20-foot alligator, and it just about ate them. And that's what they remember. So, yep. Look, it is a great... And hey, it's a great thing to sit there, sip your coffee in the morning, and look out there and see the birds waiting, the fish striking. There's a lot of other benefits to it as well.
It's fantastic. I got to make sure you come back and see me soon, because we got a bunch of more questions about this. You're going to come back and see me soon?
Absolutely.
You like how I put him on the spot? JJ McCool, thank you, man. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next. Y'all have a great weekend.